Bruno, thank you. I appreciate you taking the time coming to the studio with me today to sit down and talk about jazz music, for lack of a better word, and your experience with it, your thoughts on it. And before maybe we get into talking about, you know, jazz music and what you're doing today, I always like to understand when I talk to my guests, where did they start? Why, I ask this question, and I'll ask it to you.
Yes.
Why do you do what you do? Why does Bruno, how is it that I can find, you know, two or three days a night, and sometimes more, Bruno Hubert solo or with a group, either as leader or accompanying, playing, you know, the music that you play, whether it's your arrangements of jazz standards, whether it's supporting the original music of a Brad Turner or any of the players, a Mike Allen or anybody that you might play with. Why did you pursue this? Where did it start?
Yeah, that's a very good, that's interesting. I always say I was also lucky. I mean, growing up in this small town like Maniwaki, that the only thing we could actually do, and I shouldn't say this, but you know, Maniwaki is a beautiful place, a small city, but it's beautiful. And once the winter started, basically, you know, play hockey, and or go to school, of course, and play hockey. But the city had for years had a marching band, which was very interesting because the marching band was sort of the, you know, sort of the biggest activity aside of going to school was like. But then again, marching band, there was like 75 of us, like sometimes 80 people in the marching band.
That's a big marching band.
So we and every you had to audition, you know, every year, you know, audition to get your part, because if you didn't cut it, you could just the next year, like, you know, it was like, oh yeah, there's too many trumpet players this year, you know, because I started the trumpet. Everybody had to start with trumpet, first of all, because you needed to prove that you would read music. And then, of course, it's a marching band, so the more trumpet player, the merrier, you know, the band. It's like, and then if you were good enough, then you would get, you know, a trombone. And then if you were good enough on trombone, then you could actually play drums if you wanted to. But you had to go, like, through a few instruments before they say, okay, now you can play drums. Because if it's your decision, really. And I was one of those guys that, like, I thought trumpet was pretty punishing in terms of, you know, like you were saying, practicing. And it's very physical. And it's like, yes, it's, you know, well, thank God we were in a marching band. So it's actually the music wasn't that too complicated, although it was from time to time. But then that was funny because right away, our musical or maestro was very into, like, if he would find one of the 75, you know, for him he only took one person every year. Like if he was inspired by one student, go like, check this guy out, maybe he will become a musician. And then like you would be covered with gold, like, you know, going like, here's the key to the practice room, come practice anytime you want, you know, kind of thing. And so I was lucky because I was one of those where the maestro was like, you know, Bruno, and then he would, you know, tell my parents, go like, I think, you know, this, he seems to really like playing music at this point, kind of thing. And I was just the drummer, you know, at the point I played in the drum line. But, and I quickly, we had, you know, the maestro had this entire huge system of, like, as soon as you enter the practice room, he had like little watchers, you know, the different people. They were just like, oh, Bruno started practicing 4:30. And then they would check you know, just like when you're done practicing, there was like, oh, I mean, of course you're the drummer, so they can tell. I was like, oh, you just finished practicing. And then they would say, ah, he's practiced an hour and a half today.
And so was this part of the school system?
Well, no, this was an entirely separate entity, but the city was really into this because, of course, Maniwaki had a marching band, so the marching band would do all the football games, all the big event, you know. So we'd parade, actually, we'd perform a lot. Like, the marching band would actually get paid So we'd actually make some money, you know, like not a lot, but, you know, we'd make like, I don't know, like sometimes like, you know, $100 like in 1 week, because we did like 3 parades, you know, and then so he would just like, it was $100 each, like, you know, 75 of us, you know, because he got 10 grand for the, to do that concert. And so we'd do all those kind of things. It was kind of fun. But then again, like he was a great music teacher. He was a math teacher too. That's what's funny. In the high school, it was the math teacher. He took pride of teaching all the worst students. So there was like, you know, in high school, like there's like the A class, the B class, the C, and then there's the D class. You know, like the failures, which I was mostly the time part of it, because not. But that was the class he liked to teach. Is all the people that had problem with math. He would make it fun for you. He would make so you'll understand it. And then eventually you'd just go back up. You know, next year it was like, oh, you moved up now, you know, a little better. Because, you know, he always explained math in with music was, of course, it's very integrated. So I had a lot of conversation with him and the mathematics of, you know, of music as well, of course, you know, numbers, you know. So. And so that like to me, although like I didn't listen to jazz like at all, like that's funny because we listened to, you know, at the time, you know, it was like the, you know, late 70s. So, you know, we were into, you know, Led Zeppelin and Supertramp and maybe Toto was probably the most jazzy, like, you know, not Steve Gadd, but Jeff Porcaro at the time. You know, to me, that was a jazz drummer. It was like, there's no way, you know, you can play like this, you know, it's not. Not rock music. This is like fancy, you know, kind of thing. But yeah, so definitely the marching band too was amazing because, without knowing it, playing all this, you know, marching band music, it's actually, you know, walking at the same time. That actually was something really. I find that something that a lot of people don't experience because, you know, they try to feel time sitting at the piano or just standing an instrument. But when you're in the marching band, everything is like you have to learn how to actually be walking and subdivide different things with your instrument, which is, it sounds easy, but as soon as you like, you know, it's choreographed, that does something for your feel, just because you know how to walk, literally walk while you're playing. So with drums was very kind of interesting, you know, to go like to walk this way and then to accent this as opposed to over there. And of course, some of, you know, it's tough. So we often rehearse in the parking lot for hours, just going like all together, just because it's a show too. So you have to, if you lift your arm like this, the other guy has to lift your arm like this. It can't be like this one, it's this one. So it was very interesting how. For me, like that, you know, that's one of my probably the one thing that helped me when I started to learn piano is that I already played percussion like for a long time, so that just made a lot of sense. Like the rhythm made a lot of sense, although it had some effect on the hand position that was not so good. Like, you know, I still have trouble with playing, like, you know, it's like the real. Like my hands are still going, you know, like playing percussion for some reason. Like you said, like when you mentioned vibraphone, I was laughing because it's like, yeah, that proves that it's still there, playing, you know, mallets and so from years of playing mallets first before piano, it's somewhere still there.
So, you've got this introduction to music in Maniwaki. Yeah. Playing drums in the marching band,
yes.
There's some discipline, rhythm, there's all kinds of great things to build those fundamentals.
Yes.
What's the story of how you move from there to jazz piano? Where do you, how is that, yes. how does that happen?
That's so interesting. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, that make a long story short, there's like, I'm one of those guys that had a really great time in high school, although it was, you know, high school is intense for everybody, but especially in a small town, it's intense. But because of the marching band was there, so as I was getting better, as I was getting to like 17, you know, 18, then my focus in music was more and more you know, this is what I wanted to do. So eventually school started to go worse. And so I couldn't graduate when I was supposed to. So I stayed an extra year, which was the most fun I've ever had. I, you know, if anybody, you know, I know people always think it was like, oh, high school, you're done with high school, go to college, right? But it's like, when you spend an extra year, because you're the elder, now all of a sudden you're like the authority because you're a year older than everybody else.
The authority on what, Bruno?
Well,
exactly.
Well, the authority in, like, you know, living, you know, in high school. Although I had the keys to the arena, you know, and because the marching band was, you know, all the practice room was, and on the top floor of the arena, so we had our own mezzanine to watch all the junior hockey game, which was, you know, the senator from Ottawa would come sometime over there when they were a junior team. And so we could watch, and they were the marching band, so we had a lot of time play on the ice for the game. And then we could just go back to the practice room and just watch the hockey game from the mezzanine, which was also a very nice privilege that we had. But what I was saying, but so that, you know, I stayed an extra year in high school, before I graduated, and so I was legal also to drink beer, which was very nice, you know, to actually experience high school when you can actually have beer. Nobody can give you a hard time.
Yes.
That was sweet, yes. Finally, I could stay in the club in between the gig, because we played in clubs, my rock band, and because we weren't 18, so we had to get out of the club in between sets. We couldn't stay inside because it was, you know, we were too young, basically, so... So we'd always been kicked out. So the last year was fun because it was like, hey, I can go hang out at the bar now. But also, like, the you know, at the time, I you know, a few, like, you know, really wanted to go study music. There was, you had to go either to Montreal or Quebec City. And, of course, you know, I didn't speak English. So I would have not been able to go to Toronto. But the school, the music school in Montreal and in Quebec City were quite, you know, advanced, you know, kind of thing. So two additions. So I made those additions.
Which schools? Just
Well, I went in Montreal. I mean, I didn't go to those schools, but I've auditioned for every music school that was in Montreal, like from the conservatory to the University of Montreal, McGill. There was... couple of college too, like I can't remember the name.
LaSalle?
No, not LaSalle, but that was Saint-Laurent. Saint-Laurent was the big college there because of the drum teacher too. That's the drum teacher was running the program there so at the time. And but I didn't make any of those auditions. I didn't make it in. So eventually I told my dad I wanted to go there because all my friends in the marching band, I would say 80% of them. And I would say 80%. I would say 60% of them would join the army, and 20% were straight into, like, you know, computer science, you know, because that was the beginning in the, you know, late 70s. That was like, if you go in computer engineering, you're going to make it. Like, right. You're going to be fine, you know, kind of thing. It was very high demand, you know, era. But then somehow my dad is like, you know, it's like, you like music, you know, it's like, yeah, although he was really proud of me saying that I wanted to go in the army, it's like, oh, yes, my son wants to go in the army, but of course, you know, kind of thing. And I didn't, like, my dad was like, you know what, you want to go study music, go study music. And then so my older brother, I've got an incredible family. So my older brother decided that, because my parents, you know, were a little nervous about letting me go to Quebec City by myself. So my older brother moved to Quebec City with me.
Wow.
So I could go to school over there.
Wow.
But that also, like, was amazing because my brother was like, you know, was like, yeah, study music. And that was a good actually, now that I remember, it was the first time I actually heard Keith Jarrett. And because he had this massive record collection, he and my older brother loved Keith Jarrett, and he was like, although I wasn't playing the piano at the time, I was a full, you know, rock drummer that's going in classical school kind of thing. And my brother was like, check this album, and it was the White Album, you know, the most famous one. And yeah, I swear to you, he played this on this huge, you know, speakers, like, cranked. And I remember being really impressed by this, going like, wow, this is like, that's like rock music to me, that kind of thing, especially that album of all the...
No, it wasn't the Cologne concert, was it?
The Cologne concert. And so I remember that. That's funny because that years went by after this, before piano, I went like, piano, you know, cause it's interesting. As in the college with Forrest the drummer, they would highly suggest the drummer to take piano lesson. It was free. You would just choose a master's student, and he's going to give you a lesson every week. And then, because eventually, that's funny, because drums slowly put the piano in the front, and then it took like, you know, until I was like well in my 30s before, you know, jazz piano sort of went like, oh, okay, maybe I want to do this now, you know, kind of thing.
So you're in Quebec City in your early 20s?
Yes, yes.
At a music college?
Yes, at Sainte-Foy, it was called.
Sainte-Foy.
And it was like, you know, classical school with, you know, the big band that, you know, it took me a while to get in the big band because I wasn't good enough to play.
On the drums?
Yeah, on the drums or on the piano for that reason. But my, again, like teachers, you know, those schools are great. Like the teacher was like, oh, you want to play piano? I was like, nobody wants to play piano. Like none of the classical people really wanted to play in the big band because, you know, it's like if you play piano in the big band, it's kind of, you know, it's like plink, plink, you know, like it's not like playing.
It's not legit.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, and it's, you know, and a lot of the classical people. And then so my teacher was like, you know what? We don't have anybody who wants to play next year, so maybe you should just try. I'll teach you, and then you'll just, you'll practice your chart and play what's written, and then we'll see what happened. And then as that slowly started, like this, for sure, like my first teacher, his name is Régent Marois, which he is now at Cap College, Capilano University now. Because mm-hmm, mm-hmm. after I was, finished school, he actually got a job offer here, and then he came to Vancouver, and then he was the one phoning me, he was going like, you have to come to Vancouver, check this little college if you want to study jazz, because at that point he knew like, now I wanted to play piano, like jazz piano. So he says, you should come over here. And there was those great, Miles Black was teaching at the time over there, and Al Wohl was there. So there was like those three or four unbelievable piano player at the college, just teaching mostly rock musician. And that's because it was just their school they started at the time was just because they were like, well, let's start a school. We'll go over there, there's a building, and then this Cap College started the music program pretty much like that in early 70s too, like, which is kind of crazy how long this school has been there, huh? For sure.
So you moved out to Vancouver.
Yes.
And how long had you been in Quebec?
Well, I was in Quebec from 82 till like 97, more or less.
Wow, yeah. Wow, so, okay.
And without graduating ever, but I was in the college for a long time.
So
I redid the third year, and then I redid the fourth year for another 5 years, and then eventually, like, I was like, maybe I should go somewhere else. You know, not good enough to, you know. But it was classical school, so it was kind of, you know, to graduate with your, your bachelor degree in classical performance was, you know, it's quite hard. And I was definitely not at the level to do that. But I loved school, so I stayed, you know, as long as the Royal Bank would pay the student loan, it's all good. And then that's when I came to Vancouver, because that school was like, you know, it's a diploma, just pay your tuition, you're it. You know, it's like, and as long as you want, come take lessons. So I was there for like Cap. I was at Cap for like another 7 years, kind of thing.
So I'm recalling my first, the first time I saw you play. And I'm thinking it was either the fall of 1993 or sometime in 1994 here in Vancouver.
Yes,
playing at a bar on Broadway, maybe near
between Maine and Cambie. Here, that was 89. I would say 97. 97 was the end of my university career, more or less. That's 97 was when I went to Texas. I was already here. Yes, of course. So, yeah, so I left Quebec in 89. Yes, of course. 7 years of.
So you had been at CAP from about 1990-ish.
I arrived at CAP in 89, actually.
89, yes. So you were studying with Miles Black?
Yes.
And when did you start playing around town? Because when I saw you playing in, 94, 95, 93, 94, 95.
Yeah, those were the first few years of...
You sounded like you had already a certain amount of experience playing jazz.
Yeah, yes.
Well, you were already sounding... interesting at that time, in my opinion.
Well, that's very nice. But of course, that's funny because I would have to say that I remember when I first moved here and sat down with Miles Black, because Miles, of course, we spent a lot of time with me, and we the first, because that was like the first couple of years, it was like. To me, it was just discovering because I didn't know anything. Like he would say, like, "Okay, have you?" Miles would say, "Do you know Bill Evans?" And I was like, "No," and I was like, "Okay, check." Red Garland? I was like, "No," right? Check Chick Corea? I was like, "Yeah, I've heard of Chick Corea." Herbie Hancock? No, and I was like, there's like all the big icons. I was like, I had no idea. I knew, not that it's a bad thing, but I was a big fan of Bob James at the time. As Bob James was probably one that, because he would play keyboard too, like, so I was really into keyboard, of course. And Bob James was one that was like, this guy's not just a keyboard player. You can tell something else, he was playing all those great albums with David Sanborn, and I was so in love with this. That was my era, like playing everything with this hand, kind of thing, the other hand on the joystick. I didn't play much with that hand at the time. So Miles was the one, like, just go work on this, stride piano and stuff like that. Miles is an incredible teacher. And so that's the thing, everything I was doing, it was all came pretty much from his hands, at the time.
Let's jump forward a little bit. I think you've given us a good sense of kind of the, how your path to get to sort of the introduction or the kind of walking into the world of jazz music. But you sound and I've seen this said before, and I think maybe I've heard you say it that you came kind of late, not only to the piano but maybe to the world of jazz.
Yes, absolutely.
Today, if somebody goes and picks up, one of your recordings, say Live at the Cellar from 2008 on Corey Weed's Cellar Live label, an album that I listen to a lot. But to me, there's a certain mastery. There's a uniqueness. There's this very, very much a uniqueness in the way you play, and I think I heard it even in the mid '90s when I first heard you. Today, when if somebody comes to hear you play, say with your trio at the Libra Room, you're playing a very unique approach to mostly the Great American Songbook, jazz standards, whether it's Cole Porter or Lawrence and Hart or any of those tunes you might play. When did that kind of conception start to evolve in your playing?
Well, I think the one thing when I started, of course, to get into jazz, the one thing that I discover is all in all the composition. Because again, like being a French background. English also is a thing I've learned pretty much when I moved to Vancouver. So that was another discovery to me. It was just to discover, you know, English poetry in the, you know, in the American songbook, you know. And so I, and then Cap College, again, being Capilano University now, so being a school that was very strong with singers, there was actually more singers than there was any other instrument. So that was a school that was, if you wanted to play with singers, that was a good place. So, and I remember when I first started to go, like, you know, and again at the recommendation of my teacher, it says just accompany singers, just piano and voice, and just you'll see what's gonna do, because like you have to be the orchestra, you have to go, that's how it starts, that's how it's gonna end. You know, like all this arrangement, you know, that you have to do. And I eventually goes like, you know, I can't, you know, I like this, you know, I can't get enough of this, as in like, let's play more songs, you know, let's learn more songs. And so the, especially working with singers, which is, I for a good portion of, you know, for that, like between, like, you know, for a good 10 years probably, I was always playing with singers. And eventually it got to a point where it was like, okay, let's be instrumental now. So I do still accompany singers from time to time, but it's interesting now how it's more instrumental most of the time. It's actually, you know, actually more seldom now than if I accompany a singer. But
speaking of singers, we talked one time about an experience that you had working with perhaps one of the most famous people you've been associated with, Gino Vannelli.
With Gino Vannelli, yes.
That's a good story, and I would love to capture it if you're willing to tell it.
Yeah. Well, again, it's amazing. If it wasn't of Miles Block, again, my teacher, because Miles was like Gino. Was hovering around Miles and going like, I want you to be my piano player. And at the time, his wife was just about to have the first kid. And those were tours that would go for years, you know, like around the world. So Miles was like, you know, I don't think I can take that gig. And then so Miles had to make a huge decision there, going like, well, I can't just leave my wife now, as in, like, you know, even if it's to make $1 million playing on the road. And so Miles has to go like, you know what, I want to stay with my wife, I want to see my kid growing, I'm not ready for this. But then he looked at me and says, Bruno, you on the other hand, you have no attachment whatsoever. Like, you can go on the road. And I was like, yeah, I guess so, you know. And Gino, of course, Gino's music at the time, it was becoming more jazzy, but it's still very, you know, it's arranged and you play this and you play it like this, you know. Although the thing that I found that was still really hard with Gino is that it was, you know, you had to be a showman on the piano to accompany him, which I wasn't at the time. I was a very young jazz piano player. But Gino really liked this, and he was very, very, I worked with him for years, I mean, for quite a few years, without being the one selected to go on tour, because I wasn't good enough to perform, you know, with this kind of band, and which is unfortunate. But yeah, Gino was still going like, come on, let's work on this, you know, like, it will happen, you know, like, keep recording and working on new songs and new arrangement.
So he actually, as you were told it before, he actually brought you down to his studio in Portland?
Oh, yes, yeah, so, like, absolutely. Even when I was in Texas, he would just say, like, hey, what are you doing next week, kind of thing. And then, so I was kind of his, like, you know, bring me to his studio, and then we'd start writing. Like, he would start, you know, he would jump on the, like, pretty much, like, here with a 9-foot grand. And he would sit on the drums and say, okay, you got this idea. And then, like, he showed me a couple of chords, you know. I was like, this groove kind of thing. And then he would go on the drum set, and literally he would just like, okay, we're gonna write a song. We're gonna, like, you know. And that was literally the, how do you say this, the transcript, you know. I would just, it would, like, he would say this.
Like a scribe, yeah, basically.
This sounded good. Let's write this down. And I was just like, okay, well, I write it down. Then we'd work on another section. And then often he would just go like, well, just sing, like vocalize, you know, like just without lyrics. Before he would even have an idea, it was like, ah, this song is going to be about this. And then, which is amazing, because then he would say, then he would phone his lyricist, and he would say, this story, I need a story that's going to talk about this, and write me some words. And his lyricist, of course, worked with him all the time, so he would just get a little demo of our rehearsal, and then he would write lyrics, and then, you know, Gino would readjust them to his liking, and then, yeah, there's another song. Like, it was nice because his process, Gino's process of writing, and I, that's why they're so good. It's like they don't, you know, they might have an idea of a song one day, and then it's like, okay, it's over. But for the song, from the inception of the idea, all the way to the end of the product, it's like it can be a year later before the song is finally recorded. And it's played by different people, you know, try different people, and so it's very, you know, meticulous, you know. It's like, ah, this bar is still not right, you know. And then for the longest time, you're like, okay, we're gonna keep working on this, you know.
So you were basically his collaborator to get these tunes built. Maybe even get them demo, recorded, yes. Charts written.
Yeah,
to the point that then he would bring in a very expensive
and then
session guy for 2 days, and
the bass player from Yellow Jacket would come in, and you know, well, I didn't play with Michael Brecker, but Michael Brecker was still around at the time, and the you know, they would come and take a solo on some tunes, and then it was funny because the tour he was working on trying to get me to do this one tour. And it was just too short notice. But then his band was those Quebec guy from USEP, was the bass player and the drummer from USEP, which is like, I was like, those were my idols at the time. And it was like, oh, I was this close to play with them, but I was still too young. I was like, it was just too much.
And this was what, you were 30-ish or something? Or?
Yeah, I was like 34, mm-hmm, 30, mm-hmm. 34, 35, yeah, I was like,
that's still pretty high pressure.
Yes.
A big famous singer, recording artist, like
yes, absolutely, and shows that, you know, on Coliseums, and you know, sold out.
So you performed as well.
Well, I've never performed with him other than in the studio, but because that's the thing that I quickly. You know, that's the thing. Eventually, that's what he says. It's like, all right, that's fine. We're just going to keep working.
There's a certain pressure that comes with the expectations of performing with Gino Vannelli.
Oh, yes.
As you said, it's not just the music, it's the performance as
well.
Right?
Yeah, and then it's like, of course, the music is, it's like,
only,
you know,
part
some
of
Gino's stuff, it's like when it's fast, it's really fast. And then it's like, you have to be like, not just a good jazz piano player, you have to be a showman. And that's the thing, I was like, eventually I was like, this is like, I don't think I can do this next month. know, like, maybe I could do more now. I could, you know, just be a little bit more flamboyant now with this music. But at the time it was like, yeah. Gino always says, it's like, no, you'll find your way, you know, you'll do it the way you like it.
So I'm going to shift gears again. We've talked a little bit about some of your background. You came out of Maniwaki, an unlikely place perhaps for a jazz musician,
yes, absolutely,
if you will, to come from. But
indeed, yeah.
Nevertheless, there's important experiences that give you that foundation.
Yes.
You come study with Miles Black. You hang out at Cap College. You're playing around town here and there. You get this experience sort of working with a top kind of, pop star, I see some connections here. The marching, there's a rigor there, there's performance there, there's some fundamentals there that actually do have some links to jazz. Playing with the singers, supporting the singers, the whole idea of the song, being exposed to the concept of a song as a complete unit, the lyricism around it, the poetry, as you said. So, say from maybe the last 10 or 15 years, you've spent much of your career in Vancouver. Yes. Some people refer to you as Canada's best kept secret.
Yes.
You seem to perhaps, you don't necessarily seem to welcome the limelight, or you don't seem to be looking for fame.
Yes.
What are your favorite things, I guess? What are your favorite things? You play Friday nights at the Libra Room, and to me that's the best deal in the world in terms of jazz. Like, it's a brilliant show. It's extremely lively. It's masterful, but it's not. I think sometimes it's not in the back. It's sort of in the background. But I have to say, when you look around Vancouver, to find jazz being played, there's a lot of very, very good musicians. There's a lot of good performances, but there aren't many places, I can't actually think of any, that have the liveliness of the experience of the Libra. What is it you enjoy about it, or what do you like the most these days in terms of your music experiences?
Well, that's a good point you're saying, because my good friend Brad Turner, we were talking about this. There's one that I find one thing that I find really interesting in playing trio, piano trio, is that if you're lucky enough, anyway, like I've been privileged over the years that a bass player and a drummer would come along, and then you would start playing with them, and then you only play with them. You don't play with. The nature of things is you have to play with different bass player and play with different drummer. But I've been lucky that most of the time there's a core, like Brad Turner's quartet, which has seen some people from time to time, the different bass player for some shows or a different drummer for some shows. I think I might have missed one or two gigs with Brad in the 25 years span that we've played together. I think there may be a couple, and if not, if there's a couple, it's because I either didn't have my passport or I couldn't just go through the border or something like this. That would be the only reason.
You get familiar with, you get comfortable with playing with the same guys for a period of time.
Yes, and then I would say that you get to a point. From now, which is my good friend James Meager, there's been couple of drummers again, but it's so interesting because James, it's almost like being in a trio like this. The bass player, once memorized the music, there's something that happened that is I would say something happened that eventually gets exponential. The longer you stay together and keep playing, at least once a week, which is in a way it's nothing. If we think about it, great bands would play together every day. It would just, that's what you do. And then eventually that's why it sounds like Miles Davis, and that's why it sounds like Weather Report, and or any of those crazy bands, or Yellow Jacket for that reason, which is but then that's the thing. Then after this, it's interesting how what it does afterwards, it puts you on this pedestal, literally the drummer and the bass player, just because they know you so well, because they play with you so much. It puts you on this pedestal, but the pedestal also keeps pushing you further up, as in, eventually it makes you get better. It forces you to get better because you won't be able to go. Every good moment will just call for another moment that's even better. And I find that it's so inspiring to feel this, like with a trio, to go like. It's funny because there's some regulars that comes to the Libre Room, like, despite the fact that it's a circus and it's really loud. There's always some people that notice this. They go like, you know, this is like, I mean, I was here a few months ago and now this sounds even greater than a few, as in like, it's the same repertoire, but it sounds even better. And I was like, yeah, that's because we've stuck together for so long. And then that's only if you're lucky, if you're with the same people for like 2-3 years, you know, and stuff like this. Like a band with Brad, like with Brad Turner's quartet, which is like 20 years later. Yeah, there is something there that, you know, every time, you know, like that's the thing to me, like every day you go, okay, how much time do I have? How much time do I have before, you know, the next show so I can start working on this again, you know, like. And Brad always tells me this, that he always finds that amazing, that I play that music. It's music. I play it despite the fact that it doesn't matter if we're playing or not. I just keep playing that music, hoping that we're going to play sometime very soon.
So before we wrap up, maybe just tell me some gigs, some shows. What's in the next week or two or three for Bruno? Anything you want to tell people about, or
well, there maybe was
we want to share with the public?
There's one show I should actually share with the public that I'm not actually doing anymore. But it was my idea, my dream, with a singer that I've accompanied for quite a few years now, quite a many years. His name is Jacqueline Guillou,
mm-hmm.
And yes. Jacqueline Urban. I mean, she's got a crazy band now. Like, that's one of the lady that I find that always, you know, there's always a regular band, but then it changed every few years, another band, another album, you know, kind of thing. And now she's got a band with strings, which is awesome. And I really wanted to be part of it, but there's a tour attached to it, and it's funny because now I realize it's like, I don't have, this is like a huge commitment, you know, in time to work on all this new music. And I had to tell Jackie, he's like, you know, maybe I'm not, like a little bit like Gino Vanelli's situation, maybe it's like, maybe I'm not the one for that. You know, it was my idea. I was like, you and strings one day, Jacqueline and strings, this got to happen. And now it's happening. So that's a big show for her at the Rio Theater, which is like the 5th of March. And I'm going to be there in the audience, actually the piano player with her was perfect because that's Jill Lebeque, which is another great singer and composer. And I was telling Jacqueline, like, she's the one. She is your. Hopefully, they'll stay together for a long time. But then other than this, it's funny. The trio is going to play at the Libre Room every Friday, and
you have a special guest returning.
Oh yes, that's right. So now we have the great Ted Crosby, of course. But which is funny because that's his trio, right? Like, I was saying, this is in a way that's his band. It's my trio as well, but that's his band now.
Trios on one.
Two
cheese.
Rats on one cheese. Yes.
Two trios of rats on one cheese.
Yes.
So you're sharing the cheese.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's Braveheart, Ted yes. Crosby, Omar yeah. Amlani on drums, James Meagher on bass, yeah. And James and Omar are your rhythm section, yes. Essentially.
Yes, and then we play at Frankie's February 25, 26.
This next Friday?
No, that the very last week of February.
So Friday and Saturday nights.
Yeah, from 11 to the late 11 set. To 1 a.m.
So yes. So if, well, I may not get this up right away, but if I can, I will get it up. But
if not, the next show is going to be Carnegie Hall.
Carnegie Hall.
2031.
That'll be our next conversation is when and how are we going to get you down to New York?
Oh, my goodness, yes.
So
first, we get a passport.
Yes.
It's not expired. Yes.
So that's the next project, is to find a way to quietly sneak you down to New York City and quietly insert you into the scene there with no pomp and circumstance we don't want to set high expectations. We want to people to be surprised at this guy who showed up.
Yes,
that's the next conversation. Next time on the Jazz Shed, when we have you on here, we'll talk about that.
Well, absolutely.
But duty calls. You have to get to your next gig, and I have to get to my next gig.
Yes. Perfect. Yes.
All right. Thank you, Bruno.
Well, thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you. That's so amazing.